WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This week, we're featuring a series on the history of the blues with our rock historian, Ed Ward. The recordings he's playing are selected from two blues box sets released by the Smithsonian Institution. Today, Ed tells us about the post-World War II era and how the electric guitar changed the blues in Chicago.
World War II radically changed the lives of many African Americans when they discovered that due to manpower shortages, war-related industries were integrated. For the first time, they could work a good job and get paid the same as everyone else. More money meant more to spend on leisure, and although the record industry was mostly shut down due to shellac shortages, the club scenes in Harlem, South Central Los Angeles, Chicago's South Side, and many other neighborhoods were jumping. And since moving to a big city didn't turn you into a sophisticate overnight, a lot of the jump was caused by blues.
Mr. Blues jumped a rabbit and running for one solid mile. Yes, Mr. Blues jumped a rabbit and running for one solid mile. Well, the blues caught the rabbit and he cried like a baby child. He said, please, Mr. Blues, don't treat Mr. Rabbit so bad. Please, Mr. Blues, don't treat Mr. Rabbit so bad. Don't you know, this is the first blues that I've ever had.
The blues coming out of the cities in the 1940s were a potent combination of the drive of swing jazz and the earthiness of down-home blues, and shouters like Wynonie Harris packed them in wherever they played. And at war's end, a new spirit of entrepreneurship came to the record industry as hundreds of small labels appeared to record some of the music that had been ignored for so long. As a result, the blues got another lease on life.
Well, I'm drifting and drifting like a ship out on the sea. Well, I'm drifting and drifting like a ship out on the sea. Well, I ain't got nobody in this world to care for me.
Sepia Sinatras like Charles Brown were able to sell thousands of copies of records like Drifting Blues, but they weren't the only blues singers getting a chance. In Detroit, a businessman found a transplant from the Mississippi Delta, recorded him, and watched as the record shot up the charts.
Yeah, my mama, she didn't love me. She had to stay out all night long. Oh, Lord. Well, my mama didn't lie me. She had to stay out all night long. I didn't care if she didn't lie. I was boogie boogie in her house.
John Lee Hooker touched black homesickness with Boogie Chillin' and sold hundreds of thousands of copies of it in 1948. Another generation had arrived from the South, and a more aggressive music was coming out of Southside clubs.
Well, I roll and I tumble, cried the whole night long.
McKinley Morganfield, known as Muddy Waters, was the baddest cat in town, and his electric slide guitar playing updated the music Robert Johnson had played. Robert Johnson had influenced musicians far in excess of the small number of records he'd sold while alive, and it really showed in Chicago.
I don't get up in the morning, I believe I dust my room.
Elmore James made a career out of Johnson's Dust My Broom, recording it countless times over the years and using its slide lick even more. Playing harmonica on the original recording was Alec Rice Miller, who took the name Sonny Boy Williamson after the original Sonny Boy was murdered in 1948, and he too became part of the Chicago firmament.
You're talking about your woman. I wish to God, man, that you could see mine. You're talking about your woman. I wish to God that you could see mine. Start to love it. She bring eyesight to the blind.
And rounding out the pantheon was Chester Burnett, who had traveled with Charlie Patton as a boy and now called himself Howlin' Wolf. Smokestack Lightning, one of his most powerful songs, features his howling, which he claimed was an attempt to imitate country singer Jimmy Rogers. The rivalry between all these musicians could fill a novel, but it resulted in a creative ferment that would echo down through the decades. And as rock and roll started its long gestation, the blues was also mutating in several more directions. More on that tomorrow.
Rock historian Ed Ward, our series on the history of the blues, is produced by Phyllis Myers. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.